Storytime with Andy and Amanda.
Right, Amanda, what are we doing today?
We're doing story time.
Yeah, what story time?
It's with Andy and Amanda, and sometimes we have a special guest.
Yeah.
I think you found one today for us, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, his dear, dear friend of both mine and yours, and he used to live around the corner for us, really, but he's now buggered off, basically, haven't you, Michael? Is that a better word for it?
You say that in England, I don't think we use that up here.
Of course, Michael. If people don't know you, mate, introduce yourself to everybody, and we'll start from there, mate.
Hi there, guys. I'm Mike Booth. I lived in Chilton for 30-something years in Manchester, and I've just moved about 5 weeks ago up to Edinburgh, so I'm missing all the poetry scene around Manchester, but I'm starting to find out what's going on up here. I'm a teacher, and I started going to a speakeasy and writing poems about probably 8 years ago when we were just a little group around the table. Speakeasy open mic night has been thriving, and I hear there's now 60-odd people coming, 59-odd ones and one normal one. And
It's not me, that.
So I'm very grateful to Andy for inviting me on this. Thank you, Andy.
Yeah, now people are wondering obviously what story time is with Andy and Amanda and today Mike. And despite the fact he's at the Zoom handle as Claire, now I presume actually over half Mike, isn't it?
I've just noticed that, yeah. I should have changed that before. I'm Claire now, I've reinvented myself.
I was expecting you to come on today. I'm ready to think what you're going to be wearing, that's why. So, anyway, obviously what story time is, of course, people don't know, is it's just like a read round and we have a chat in between it. Now, Mike, obviously, with Mike being the guest, we always let Mike go first and he will conclude the podcast. And me and Amanda will do a few pieces as well as him as the podcast carries on. So over to you first, Mike, for your first piece, Mike.
Right, well, in honour of the fact that I'm talking to someone in Manchester, I thought I'd read one that I wrote probably 4 or 5 years ago. And it was from a friend of mine who told me that her daughter had been discriminated against because she was Northern when she went to Bristol University. And she found out there was a Northern Society at Bristol University. So I thought that's an interesting idea. What would they talk about at Northern Society? So this is one called The Northern Society. I did write a sequel, which included a trip up to Edinburgh, but I'm just going to read the original one because it's too long to read the other one. And this is called The Northern Society with my mock Northern accent. And apologies to anyone who's offended by stereotyping, but an affectionate tribute to the North. It's called The Northern Society. The Northern Club meets on outskirts of town in Club with Sign for Newcastle Brown. Greyhounds and whippets are tied up outside, as all things Northern are treated with pride. There's chips and there's gravy and dollops of peas, nout wrong with dripping or tripe on steak pies. No mither or scriking, no fuss and nae bother. Just old-fashioned values, our kid. That's me brother. The caps are all flat and the vowels are and all. Fat ladies are names for the bingos we'll call. And pasties and pies and Greg's sausage roll. If drafty, we'll tell thee, but wouldn't haul. The chair calls to order and all stand to sing. The races at Bladen or Ilkley Moor ring. Sideboards and braces and buckets of coal on jukebox Oasis and rare Northern Soul. These exiles from homeland up north where it's grim are forced to drink lager and cocktails with gin. Now then, ladies and gents, courts boss, it's time we debated ketchup or sauce. A sofa or couch, chaise longue or settee, what time do we serve our supper or tea? How do we say the words give us away like castle or plastic things every day? And is it more posh having scones or a scone? An ice cream, what's served in a tub or a cone? And balm cake or muffin, a stotty or bap? What do we eat when past Watford Gap? Folk looked reek pensive as pints they did sip, and packs of pork scratchings they thoughtfully rip. Aye, they all cried, there's nought up with that. Hear, hear, yelled Justin the soft southern twat. The butties were brung out on tinfoil for trays as Yorkshire contingent swapped names for a spade. A pot then was brought out of steaming scouse stew with puddings from Yorkshire and Eccles cakes too. And blood in a fryer, puddings both black and white, none of your prawn cocktails or soft southern shite. Brass band starts up, playing Hovis track, eyes turned all watery, it takes thee back. Trouble at mill, cobbles and all that before gentrification and luxury flats. And just as debate turned to what's meant by our pants and fights breaking out between scousers and manx, the landlord, fearing some mischief or crime, holding his pint pot, yelled out, now it's time. But debate spilled out on pavement and street, and why the North is so hard to beat. We talk to each other on buses and trains and discuss the weather. It usually rains. So what do we do about arrogant shits who think that up north is truly the pits, who laugh at our mugs and scoff at our vowels and call our dishcloth their fancy tea towels? They tell us to put our powerhouse in order and talk about putting a wall on our border. So it's time to form our own northern party with booze and music and all that malarkey. Enough of the ruling southern elite and Bojo and Tories in safe northern seats. It's time for rebellion. Stand up and fight. Because life in the north is really not shite. So tell them in Bristol, in Oxford, in Kent, that grim up north is not what they meant. With music and nightlife, money aplenty, our cities are perfect when living past 20. So come to where life has so much more meaning, where people ask how you are with more feeling. Grim up north, what's that you say? I'd rather live up here any old day.
Tremendous. What do you think to that, Amanda?
Yeah, enjoyed that.
Yeah, great stuff, mate. It may seem you living up north is like you're living really up north now, Mike, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I've gone to the further north, and here there's a controversy. If you have ketchup on your chips, that's considered very English. Brown sauce with your chips is the way.
Amanda, you want brown sauce of everything, don't you? Yeah, see, Amanda said that. I put brown sauce in everything. Now, after we finish today chatting, Mike, we're going to have sausage rolls for tea tonight, and I'm going to plaster mine full of brown sauce.
The worst thing is when I make a Sunday roast with like potatoes and meat and everything, put gravy on it, and then you put brown sauce on top of that.
Right. What else do I put on top of, Amanda? Not in particular that annoys you.
Cereals.
Never put it on cereal.
Okay, that's the one thing you don't put it on.
No, pizza. I've put it on pizza sometimes, and Amanda hates me doing that as well. So anyway, right, well, what we're going to do today, better move on off, so we'll be talking cobblers all day. Now, I've got three pieces today, and people are wondering, Amanda's got two. So I'm going to do a piece now, then we're going to ask Mike to do his second piece, then we're going to ask Amanda to do her first piece, and I'll do my second, and Mike will do his third, and we'll go around for a bit more like that. Now, I've got two brand new pieces of flash fiction, and I'm going to, as Mike's not heard either of these, I'm going to let him choose which one of the flash fiction I read first. Okay, yeah. So you've got a choice of Alien Invasion on the 256 or Missing the 33 on the both bus fiend.
I'm going to go for the second one, Missing the 33.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. This one I actually wrote both these at. There's a workshop started up, Mike, actually, in Stretford Library, actually. Started just after you moved, actually. Oh, and nice. we've done a couple of these, Amanda and me, and we had a good laugh with these. So this actually kind of happened to me, actually, on the day of this workshop, or part of the story did anyway. So
right.
It was not autofiction. I know, Missing the 33. Missing the 33, you see after a few minutes, you were not the only one, as two and three people arrive at the stop right behind at the back of you. Has he gone early again? The first one, an elderly lady, said. At least 5 minutes. The second one, another elderly lady, carried on before the first one could carry on. When is the next one due? The third elderly lady interrupted the train of thought before looking at you and carrying on. Well, I don't know. Your answer stumbled out. There's nothing on the bus stop. Oh, that's typical, the first one behind you answered. The youth of today, the second tutted. Can't you check on your bus, on your what type you call, app you call it, the third asked you directly. You pulled out your phone out of your pocket and saw it be due in 5 minutes. 5 minutes, your words stumbled out. I bet it won't be here in 5 minutes, the first lady started off again. More like 15, the second lady carried on. Or 20, the third lady finished off the three of them. How about never, you snapped. I could have stood here all eternity of you ladies. The three of them stood around each other in a circle and started arguing. I've always hated you, the first one snapped at the second. Well, the second turned to the third. I wish I'd punched you off your slept arm, Barry. The third simply punched the first. Thankfully, the police had arrived, the time the bus arrived.
That's very Manchester. Scraps at the bus stop. It's like everyone's talking to each other and it all kicks off.
Yeah. Can only happen in Manchester, that one. What do you think, Amanda? Could you agree with that? Anyway, that's it.
How close was that to the truth, though, Andy? Did the police arrive? Did it get that far?
The last part about the punch-up is incorrect. The rest of it is pretty well close to the truth.
Very close.
Yeah, very, very close. What strange women they were. Anyway, thankfully, they won't listen to this, so we can move on. Now, I don't know what Amanda's doing today, because she's kept this top secret from me and Mike, she has, so I don't know. So, Amanda, what's your first piece?
Okay, this is called Seasons. The news reporter looked into the camera and began. The country has grinded to a halt because of weather. He took a breath and was about to carry on. Can we try that again? The producer asked. It's snow, not weather. The country has grinded to a halt because of snow. I thought I could just make it evergreen. Then you can reuse my report whenever the country grinds to a halt because of flash floods or heat waves, fogs or any other seasonal weather. No, just snow. That's all I want you to report on today. We can deal with other weather problems as they happen, the producer said. But I'm sick of it. All I ever talk about is the weather. Leaves on the tracks, snow halting travel, fog making it impossible to travel. It just never ends. It's like, ah, weather, run for your life, the reporter mocked. It's your job, the producer reasoned. This is not what I signed up for, he complained. I wanted to report on the gritty stuff, not talk about grit on the roads. The producer shook his head and demanded he just read the script. I've got to get home to my family, so the sooner you get this right, the sooner we can both leave. That's when the reporter snapped and lunged at the producer with so much force that he pushed him out of the window, even though it was closed. Glass shattered and screams rang out until the producer landed with a satisfying thud on the pavement 10 floors below. The reporter was still smiling when he switched on the camera and began his new report. I'm sorry to inform viewers that the news will be a little later than usual tonight, because our producer has had a tragic accident.
Excellent, Amanda.
There's always a gruesome death in one of Amanda's.
And then it would be my work without a death, would it?
Usually, have you noticed, Mike, it's usually the blokes are cop for it as well. She never kills women off, does she?
Well, you there's no her. Women in that story.
Yeah, I married her, Mike, definitely that one. So, oh, blimey, I can full remember. And oh, God, do you know Jeff Rahmer?
Yeah.
Amanda read out a poem. Was it one of your porn pieces, Amanda, was it?
It was Death by Porn, inspired by a true story.
Yeah, well, basically, which I'm responsible for that piece. I found a news article for her. But she read that one out over at, obviously, Gordon's Owners Night. He used to run Cuckoo Calling. And I fully remember that. Just we told everybody we were going to be getting married and we got delayed because of lockdown and my dad and stuff. But I always remember Jeff saying at the end of that piece when that poor bloke got killed in it, good luck, mate. That's why. So I know. Excellent stuff, Amanda. Now, if you're wondering, Mike, as well, she actually wrote that on the same workshop I was at, Amanda, didn't you? So What made you want to write that piece?
I think it was Seasons. I think that was the prompt. And I just sort of started writing about how everybody keeps panicking about the weather and it ended up with someone being murdered.
No matter what the prompt, it would end up with someone being murdered.
True. Right.
The thing I love about that workshop, though, there's a woman that was sat opposite us, and she's about 30 years or a bit more.
Well, she's in her 70s, that's for sure. Yeah. So,
about 30 or 40 years older than us. And it just feels like I'm looking at future me, because her writings were similar to mine, with like I was killing people at the end of it.
I remember her saying that her favourite writer is Stephen King, and it kind of sums it up. Amanda, Stephen King's Amanda's favourite writer as well, so you can see the influences there somehow, definitely. Yeah, so, definitely. Anyway, then, right, but carry on moving around. I want to get Michael to read out a few more pieces for us. So, okay, mate, would you like to read out your second piece for us then?
Okay, I thought I'd move to a more recent one that I wrote about a character who walks around Chorlton, who dresses very extravagantly. I think you've heard this one, you guys, as well. I've got one you might have heard, but it's he always looks like he's come straight out of Woodstock, and I believe he's a sociology lecturer, I think called Alan, if I've got that right.
I think he is, because we'll talk about that more in a minute, because I heard him story about him the other day as well.
It's an institution in Chorlton where I used to live, and so I wrote this, and I was also a little bit inspired by John Cooper Clarke at the time, because that's a late acquisition of looking into John Cooper Clarke stuff, so he kind of inspired me to write this one. And it's called Psychedelic Chic. If you type in Chorlton Hippie into Google and go for images, you'll get a picture of him. I think Chorlton Hippie is the Google tag that he can be found under. And it's Psychedelic Chic. He's the epitome of bravado in his sunshine yellow suit. His search is avocado and his aftershave is brute. With his round-handled black umbrella and his bright green kipper tie, he's quite a unique fella, a mould-breaking kind of guy. He's become a well-known landmark, parading Chorlton streets. He's never been to Primark. He has psychedelic chic. I wonder what his eyes have seen through his rosy linen shades. The Grateful Dead and Bee Gees in his mind never fades. Adored by all the lasses, some say he's just a freak. But beneath the round, low glasses lie psychedelic cheeks. And I'm going to stop there because this is the short version I've opened up. So that's the edited version. There is a bit more to it.
What you like, Mike? All I say is, I think you've put a video of it somewhere online, haven't you, that one?
So. Yeah.
So we'll make sure the link goes out to people with that one, definitely. So anyway, right, well, that being the case, then, as you caught me out, we're going much shorter piece than I was expecting. Then.
I'll suddenly scroll through my Word document and it stopped. So I thought, oh, this must be an earlier version.
Whoops. Now, I'm gonna do a rewrite of this piece slightly, because you wouldn't have known this, Michael. I was tried a couple of years ago trying to write a book about when I at my struggle with diabetes over the last couple of years, and I never finished the book off. But I'm looking at it very recently, and I need to go and get this finished off. So I'm gonna read out, well, not a very cheerful piece of this next. Okay, so, and I'll do something a bit silly of my third piece. So, but this one came about when. I sat down when I got diabetes. I was 39, so 11 years ago now, and I looked back at myself thinking, how would have the younger version of me at various stages in my life reacted to this? And I don't know if Amanda's heard this piece actually. So this one is reflections on how would I have dealt with diabetes at a younger age. I do apologize for the miserableness of this. The 10-year-old version of me would have found it confusing. And constantly would have asked over and over to the doctor what most of the words meant. The 17-year-old me would have spat on the floor in disgust and accused the older me of not being angry enough when they told me that news. Me at 21, in between constant bursts of depression and anxiety, would have nodded his head and silenced his little else. Me at 27 would have said stuff all this as soon as he got out of hospital while telling everybody he was going out in a few parties. At 39, I, however, sat there in total shock, shocked and numbness, screaming silently inside in a wordless language. At 43, I understood the medication yelling at me in the colour-coded language of the sly torment, lined up one after the other, and how I pulled myself back. At 45, I remember the shock from 39 right up to 43, how insulin controlled my life. And how it changed everything under hours overnight. Delving inside mysteries that I would have learned to how to solve one almost every night on a rolling basis. Turning within sudden curves on a constant daily basis of the way my life changed over a lifetime of struggle, unsure where I was turning next. Dosing myself in words constantly just to keep going.
Wow. Andy, that's a really moving piece. That's
great. Yeah. It was
very powerful. One of the most moving ones I've ever heard.
Cheers, mate. There's a book that's going to be sorted out with somebody in this one. So, have you heard that one before, Amanda? I don't know if you
have. Yeah, I think I've heard you read it. I still enjoy it, though.
Yeah, and if I couldn't remember if you've heard that one before, love. But yeah, cheers, Mike, as well to that.
That one's very amazing, really powerful.
And it's, I think sometimes there's some piece in your pieces of poetry you've got to live through it, basically, yeah, to actually tell the story. So, well, there will be something out of it someday, so yeah, watch your space. So. Right, okay, moving on. Amanda, would you like to read out your second piece?
This is one that I wrote when we were in Bradford and we sat down and did a little mini 10-minute workshop on the bench.
Oh, was this the one in middle of the high street we did?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. It's what happens, Mike. She gets me writing to do a workshop in strange places, she does. Anyway, Amanda, sorry, the one.
Okay, it's called Looking Up. I looked up while everyone else was left staring at their phones. I guess that's why I saw it first. It just hovered there in the sky. As a few people noticed it was harder to see their screens, they began to look up too. Although most just adjusted the brightness without looking up to see what was blocking out the natural light. I witnessed one man looking torn as his phone rang and he clearly wanted to answer it. but also appeared concerned over the spaceship in the sky. He answered his phone. I heard him say that he'd be there in 10 minutes as he ran off in the direction of the bus station. "Excuse me," I said to a young man with headphones on. He pointed to his ears but made no attempt to remove the headphones. Instead, I just pointed upwards. He opened his mouth, made a gargled sound and ran off, looking back every 2 seconds, his eyes on the ship. I looked around again. More than half the people around me were still on their phones, distracted. The other half were either running away or taking selfies of themselves with the spaceship above them. I decided I should get out of there too, so I ran. It took 10 minutes of running to get out from underneath the span of the spaceship. I heard all those who were probably still on their phones scream as the spaceship opened fire on them. I ran for another 10 minutes just to ensure I was safely out of reach. When I stopped to catch my breath, I got a news alert on my phone telling me aliens were attacking in Centenary Square.
Wow. That's my son was watching Stranger Things just before I came on. I've never really seen it, but it looked quite intriguing. I bet you like that, do you?
Ooh, just watching that today.
Yeah. That's spooky.
Very surreal. No, it's Stranger Things, like I said, Mike. I think you got me into it, Amanda, didn't you?
I can't remember who got me into it.
Amanda got me into it on the second season, so I'm sure it was, because it wasn't me. So, yeah, that's why. But yeah, you've watched the first episode of it, and yeah, I'll keep your son quiet for a bit if anyone's wondering, Mike, on it, because haven't the 7 episodes been released, and each one of them is at least an hour and a quarter.
I know, yeah, there's a lot to discover there. It was quite a scary scene. I think it'll give him nightmares, a woman on her own in the house with all the lights going off and the walls start bending with fingers coming through him and things. Oh, my God, get out of there.
Yeah, you didn't see what happened right at the end of it, right?
No, I've only half been watching it, so.
Well, I'm expecting it to crop up in Amanda's dreams tonight. That's all I'm going to say, no enemy on your dreams.
Yeah. Well, this is better than dreaming about speakeasy and people ripping my work up.
We'll tell you about that off mic, because there's one of our regulars who was a lovely guy, and I stated that on camera, who actually turned around and probably ripped all Amanda's work up in her dreams last night.
I know, and when I told you about it, you said we've got half an hour left till it starts. You can write something else.
Now, this is dreams we need to state, but we carry on here, right? So, right, okay, Michael. It's your turn now, so your third piece, isn't it? So,
yeah, can I be a bit cheeky? I have found the psychedelic chic one.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Only quite short, and then the other one I've got is quite short as well, which is a much more serious one. So,
go for it in these two now, and I've got a bit of flash fiction, I'll do them. We'll come back to you for an hour, mate. So,
slightly more developed psychedelic chic. He's the epitome of bravado in his sunshine yellow suit. His shirt is avocado, and his aftershave is brute. With his round-handled black umbrella and his bright green kipper tie, he's quite a unique fella, a dashing kind of guy. He's become a local landmark, parading Chorlton streets. He's never been to Primark. He has psychedelic chic. In a drizzly grey precinct, he surely draws some stares. He's certainly distinct in his orange spandex flares. I wonder what his eye sees through his purple linen shades. The Grateful Dead or Bee Gees in his mind never fade. Adored by all the lasses, some say he's just a freak. And beneath his round mauve glasses are psychedelic cheeks. He's a Glastonbury relic, dug up and brought up here from the age of old Tom Selleck in his stylish day-glow gear. Some may think that with his brolly, he's really out of place. Some think that he's a wally, some nudging comment, golly, or think his style is folly, but he's a special case. They say his sweet aroma will mask all stenchal reek. From Lead Station down to Cromer, he has psychedelic chic. Some say his mind is frazzled by acid, pot, bad trips, but he is always dazzled, has swagger in his hips. Now Chorlton's got some claims to fame, BGs to name but 3, badly drawn boy, Sean Ryder, but none well drawn as he. I wish my nerve was stronger and I wasn't such a geek. I wish I had half his balls beside his barefaced cheeks. A legend in his lifetime, we'll praise him for a week. And he is Mr. Chorlton, he's got psychedelic chic. Thank you.
Tremendous. Excellent. And good to hear that complete form. So it's worth stating, obviously, before you carry that very quickly. Yeah. There was talk going around, Mike. I don't know if you heard this one, but he was meant to have died, wasn't he?
And yeah, very sad on Facebook. Social media went a bit crazy. But I wrote this poem before all that happened. It was bizarre because about a couple of weeks after I'd written the poem, he was suddenly all over Facebook. But he's still alive.
He's still alive, thank goodness. Yeah, so.
I don't know him personally, but he's everyone who knows him says he's a lovely guy.
And the same,
character, we need characters in our world. And talking about characters, this one's about my mum. There's a nice little segue. You might remember I did that poem, Granny High Tech, about my mum and emails and technology, and I was very proud of her then. And I'm still proud of her now. She's 96, and she's just gone into a care home, and we've had to clear out her house and get it ready for renting for a while until things emerge and see how things work out. So this is called Tupperware, and it's just about the experience of clearing out her house. So it's called Tupperware. After all, at the end of the day, close of play, stumps up, bales off, a good innings, shuffling off the silver foil, the cling film, and the Tupperwares, preserving stuff that kept the leftovers fresh for another day. All is done. A life of order, now the rest is silence, ticking clocks and boxes, bags for pre-loved sale or bins, has-beens, the bones now left, the heart is gone. But love, words, memories still live on.
Excellent, mate.
Yeah, that's a slight shift of tone there, but I'm really proud of my mum. She's been really accepting about it, and it's been difficult for everybody, but really difficult for her to make that step and move out of her home. I mean, we've moved out of our home quite recently, and that was difficult for me, but 10 times more difficult for someone at 96, I think.
Oh, God, completely. Completely. Okay, so anyone's ever heard your poem, Granny High Tech, which is, I know, you told me, one of your favourite pieces of the mics. Yeah. It's like, it shows, obviously, that piece, how quite a character your mum is, basically. And yeah, that one there, and that's why it's great to get to 96, and she's done great. We're no two ways about it.
I've been up in Edinburgh this over this time because we didn't expect this to happen, but I've been able to spend a lot of time with her, and I'm going in most days now and spending time and holding her hand and seeing her, and it's really lovely. Precious time, really. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, completely, mate. Good luck with it, mate. Definitely relax on your mum. So. Right, okay. And as I hinted before, my third and final piece tonight is going to be another bit of flash fiction. And I wrote this at the same workshop, actually, bizarrely enough. This one is, I've got to state, is fiction. There is no fact in this piece at all, okay? So this is Alien Invasion on the 256. And if anyone's wondering what the 256 is, it's a fairly frequent bus service that runs outside Stretford Library. So, okay. Alien Invasion on the 256. By the time the 256 bus arrived outside Stretford Library, over 30 minutes late, both Andy and Amanda were both starting to really overheat. "This is the last time I let you track me all the way down here," Amanda snapped. "It's not my fault," Andy responded. "It said it should have arrived 20 minutes ago." "Do you want to go and get a taxi?" "Thank God," Andy looked at Amanda as the bus pulled up, before swearing as two children got off at the other side of him. "Jesus, see that? Two Martians," his words dangled out. "What have you been drinking?" Amanda snapped. "Nothing," Andy tried reasoning, and grabbed one of the Martians' hands. Amanda pulled him off. "Leave that child alone." Andy yelled, "There's no child, it's a Martian." The bus driver then cut in. "For God's sake, are you getting on or off? I'm running late." Andy tried reasoning with him, but Amanda dragged him on. "I've had enough. We've got a long enough journey home as it is." "You can't," Andy spluttered, and made a final desperate hand to grab the Martian. It pushed him away and pulled out a laser gun. After they'd killed everybody, one of the Martians transformed into the bus driver. At the next stop, they picked up 8 more Martians and carried on for the rest of his route.
I love the normal life resuming after all that. That's what would happen, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. It could only happen in Stretford, is all I'm going to say.
We talk at the pub that night, but you just carry on.
Yeah, as you do. So, do you remember me reading that one out to Amanda when my first read that? Yeah, she thought it was mental when I read that one out. So, go over there. Perks of being married to him. Anyway, Michael, that's on to our final and fourth and final piece now. It's from you, mate. So, Take us out, mate.
Okay, I'm wavering slightly between two options. There's Fingers Crossed or there's the Caterpillar Club.
Why don't you read? Tell you what, mate, since it's you and you're a dear friend of ours, why do we read them both out?
Oh, really? Okay. I'll go and overstay my welcome. All right. I'll start with fingers crossed then. They're not hugely long. So fingers crossed. I've had about four attempts of writing a poem called Fingers Crossed, and I don't even know if this is the one I'm going to settle on, but I think it's a symbol for our times. And I'm copyrighting that slogan for whenever I bring a collection out, because I'm going to call it Fingers Crossed. There's so many worries and so many concerns, and we're just living in hope. So I wrote this one called Fingers Crossed. The buds now open, sun dispels the dark. The nights of bat give way to morning lark. And as we emerge, blinking into the light, brimful with fright and delight, apprehensive yet pensive of all we have faced and what may lie ahead, braced despite it all against the odds, we hold hands aloft with fingers crossed. When threads seem thin which hold us upright out of hospital bed, minds spin with hope defeating dread, our man, our mam, our nan or gran, all we risk our lives to love, those still here or some are now above. When fearful of the prospect of the lost, we grip their hands with fingers crossed. And facing changes, leap before you look. Jump from warm platform above the storm into racing wind, held only by a cord, eyes wide shut, a scream of fear, which makes our weak pulse race and puts a grimace or a smile on face. When all the dice into the air are tossed, we watch and pray with fingers crossed. And when with doubts our thoughts disturbed, we fake it till we make it. Keep on keeping on may be enough. Talk the talk and hope to pull it off. We let it lie, and lies we tell lie stacked in piles. Between me and you, we know it isn't true. Our profits still outweighed by cost. Our hands behind our backs with fingers crossed. Palm outwards, we want it all to stop. Fingers clench into a fighting fist, or thumbs up, or teeth sunk into wrist. High five, then middle finger raised, or V for victory reversed in hate. Two thumbs up, gripping fingers eight. The church and people well and ill will shelter beneath the steeple. Like them, we are not alone. Our blessings counting, folding bone on bone. The sign of hearts may stop us. Fingers woven like cogs from falling apart, like fragile petals in cold winter sun, or lazy bees whose lives have not begun. And all together, huddling from the frost, I hold your hand with fingers crossed.
Oh, beautiful, mate. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. Thanks. Do you want me to do the last one now? Yeah.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
This is kind of a similar theme. It's about hope and kind of how I got into poetry, having some difficult times, as many people have, and facing challenges. And I was watching the Antiques Roadshow, of all things, which I very rarely watch, but I caught a bit of it, and they showed a picture of a silver medal of a caterpillar, and it's worn apparently by people who've been saved by a parachute, because the caterpillar makes the silk parachute, and this was given in the war to people who'd ejected from planes and saved themselves with a parachute, and it's called the Caterpillar Club. So this is my adaptation of that, called the Caterpillar Club. Plummeting seawards, my upside turned down, heels overhead, tombstoning like a balloon of lead. In free fall, all grip slipped, plot lost, I fell from grace, at pace, tumbling imposter, confidence shot, like a plumb line, trying to straighten myself out, find again my bearings, inner imploding, mind exploding, with ruminations, recriminations, shame, tears, and on high alert, heart in mouth, tongue tied, hair shirt. My butterfly had shrunk to chrysalis, wound itself round with silken thread from shimmering life to almost dead. And though I tried to keep my fingers crossed, the thoughts of what I'd felt I'd lost made me freeze, weak at my knees. Action stations, hands on deck, fight in full flight, fears unchecked. I tugged at the ripcord, slender threads of sunlight, spider webs of friends could at times hold me, settle my head. And stretches, bends, set my pulse racing, tasting and testing my outer and my inner strength, like trapped tiger endlessly pacing, my flickering tiger eyes and my exhaled breath slowly filled my cradling halo, slowed my fall, the turbulence fading, I was held aloft to float and drift sift my mind of chaff and wheat, learn to laugh, to soften, not flounder or thrash, but feel held. Often one simple golden line kept me trying. All will be well, as I fell on, crying, until my feet hit ground, the mushroom of purest milk falls around. I found myself reborn, saved by silk.
Wow. Wow. God, Amanda, what I'll ask you first. Could you send it? How do you feel? How's that poem make you feel? Because that's about a lump to my throat, that did.
Yeah, I could imagine the images as I was reading.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff, that, mate. Two really good pieces there to get, let you wrap up with us today and that, Michael.
Thank you. It's been
a pleasure, mate. So now, obviously, if people want to find out more about you, where do you recommend people go then, just to come wrap up with?
I've put most of my poems on writeoutloud.net. If you search for Mike Booth on writeoutloud.net, I'm on Facebook, but not many poems are on there. So it's Mike Booth on Facebook or writeoutloud.net, where the poems are mostly.
Brilliant. It's been a pleasure today, Mike, as always, mate.
Andy and Amanda, thank you so much. And Andy, I want to give a big shout out to you for all the work you do, both of you, but particularly maybe Andy, in terms of promoting poetry and spoken word and putting effort into interviewing people and putting the speakeasy nights on. You're an absolute legend, mate. So
yeah, I'm a very tired legend sometimes as well, mate. Yeah, it's been a pleasure, mate. Now, I'll say hang around anyway, because obviously
you
need to talk to you off mic anyway. But to conclude with, thank you, Amanda.
Okay.
Zombies are us, if you're wondering about Amanda at the moment. And obviously, like I said, this obviously is, like I said, it's an audio podcast, but everyone can see it. Amanda, what's on your tagline on your podcast, on your avatar?
It's the background for my little mini episode show called My Big Fat Zombie Life.
Yeah, and if people are wondering, what's going on with that at the moment, just to wrap up with today?
Well, I can't direct anybody to it yet because they're all private files at the moment, but someday I'm going to release them all.
Someday the zombies will rise.
Yeah, rise of the zombies. And you can find me everywhere, guys, as normal. So, anyway, it's been a pleasure, guys and girls. So, Amanda, would you like to conclude with the way we do reading in bed?
Bye, everyone. And normally we wave, but nobody can see us.
See you all soon, guys. Stay safe.
Thank you, guys.
Story time with Andy and Amanda.